Welcome back to We Were Gamers. This is going to be another pre-record because currently, as this airs, I will just have gotten back from Denver.
I think there's a chance that you might still be on a plane when we would normally record. So it's
better to have it done
than not.
Yes, I would be on a plane probably when recording, though releasing, I will probably be back. It doesn't really, who cares about my agenda? We're pre-recording.
Yeah, so we're going to do a bit of a topic show here.
Yeah, and I picked this one because today, the day we are actually recording, is Hobbit Day.
It's a day?
Yeah, man. I knew you weren't going to know it was a day. But there's a thing called Hobbit Day. It is the day that Bilbo and Frodo were technically both born.
Interesting. I did not know that was a thing.
September 22nd of 2890 and 2968.
In the Shire Reckoning?
In the Shire Reckoning.
So for those who don't know what we're talking about, we are talking about J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit and other Hobbit-related things, I guess, since it's Hobbit Day. Who knew that it came in days?
Yeah, so this is Tolkien week, and Friday, well, September 22nd, anyway, is Hobbit Day. And so I thought it would be fantastic to talk some Tolkien, and the way I approached it was to start talking about the movie, the book, The Hobbit, because I didn't really know where to start, but I figured we just talk some Hobbit stuff.
All right.
Who doesn't like Hobbits, man? They're so cute.
You know, they don't wear shoes. They like to walk a lot of places. They're real into their creature comforts. Everyone agrees that, like, 11 Z's is probably a good breakfast time.
Oh, definitely. Second breakfast.
Can't forget 11 Z's.
Before we get into the book real quick, do you have, like, a Hobbit particularly that you are a fan of?
Yeah, so I, several years back now, probably you know, 2013 or something, I wanted to reread The Hobbit. I have nice versions of the Lord of the Rings trilogy books.
Oh, you mean the book? Okay, I was going to pick like an actual Hobbit, but you're talking about like a printing.
Yeah, so I have a particular version of The Hobbit, the book, that
it's
I
funny
like.
Because there's so many different ways to think of when somebody says, do you have a favorite Hobbit? You're like, so like Frodo, Bilbo, Mary, Pitt. No, not that. Like the actual physical book.
We can get into that too.
You could pick from 3 to 9 movies or whatever.
Yeah, well, let's pretend there were only 3. We're not going to worry about those other movies.
All right, so we're picking a book.
Yeah, so the book is called The Annotated Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, and it was...
So annotated by his son, I assume?
No, it was annotated by a different person.
What?
The guy's name is Douglas A. Anderson. And this is... the version I have is hardcover, but I don't know if it's in softcover now. But there are pictures all over this thing and annotations from other work that J.R.R. Tolkien has done in the margins all over the place.
Oh, cool.
And it calls back to everything. The guy did a lot of like scholarly research about J.R.R. Tolkien and other stuff that he did at the time and other writings and other versions of The Hobbit and other versions of other printings of The Hobbit and how all of them differ in like very slight ways and then how some of them differ from what shows up in Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. And so it is a really, really dense... The story... of The Hobbit, right? Like the actual book is, it's a kid's tale, right?
So to be clear, The Hobbit, for people that don't know, is pre Lord of the Rings. And it is a very light story without originally much filler or back information. It wasn't, I would call introductory tale, like you said, for kids to this world that Tolkien had been creating in the background.
Right. And so it was kind of like, hey, there's this fun adventure with this hobbit who goes along with these dwarves to fight a dragon, and they do some cool stuff in between. They see trolls and goblins, and they go through mountains and all this stuff. It's really, you know, the action moves along. The pace is quick. It's an easy read. You know, it's only like a couple hundred pages.
I was driven one of the very few times that I have not been driving, but I was driven in the last couple of years to Northern California and back, and I finished the book in the two trips.
Yeah.
Up and back.
It is a very quick read in the vein of something like a Harry Potter or something where you can just kind of turn the pages as you read because it can move so quick.
Okay.
This version then takes that and has footnotes all over the page, the sides, the margins, right? So it's a big book because of that, and it has wide margins. And then there's tons of notes about references and other versions and differences and illustrations that were in some editions and not in others and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And so it is a wonderful resource if you really like The Hobbit and you want to know more about it and like the broader context of the world and how stuff relates to Lord of the Rings and how like this book has changed over the years. So if you were going to read one and you've never read one before, you probably don't need this. But if, like me, you read it when you were younger and wanted to read it again, but you're now an adult and think that you could probably do it in a weekend, and you wanted
something,
which you definitely could, and you wanted something a little bit more, you could pick up this version, and it will have that little bit more for you. So
that's cool.
That's my hot recommendation for those who want to go back to this book.
How many copies of all the books, like Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, etc., how many copies do you own?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't think I own an actual copy of The Hobbit anymore other than this one.
Okay, so one.
But the Lord of the Rings books, I probably have a couple of, because over the years, I've definitely owned more copies than the ones that I have now.
I know I have at least a full paperback set, Hobbit to Silmarillion. Silmarillion, right?
Right.
At least one paperback, probably two paperback sets that go through that entire thing. Mm-hmm. I have them all digitally, and I know I have some hardback, like cool hardback editions of them all.
Yeah, I didn't think about it, but I definitely have digital copies of Lord of the Rings too. Yeah, I don't have any of the extended universe stuff though, beyond Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. I don't have any Silmarillion stuff. I don't have any of the like other books that his son wrote.
So the last book, and this was really worth mentioning, by the way. So the last book supposedly ever, called the Beren and Lúthien.
Oh, okay.
Was just released in June, and Chris Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien's son, said, "This is the last one I'm editing. It's the last set of stories that will ever be released."
Huh. Because they did. I know they did one before that was like the Children of Húrin or...
Children of Húrin would be the previous the previous release that he did. But he's been doing basically is not really writing new stories or not finding stories that have never been heard before, but he's been kind of like finding drafts of things. So like this Beren and Lúthien one, it's three versions of the same Beren and Lúthien story that he's found. Like ones where they weren't called Beren and Lúthien, ones where they were, and a short version that was put into one of the stories and linked to Aragorn, and like he combines them all and finds the places that there are discrepancies and resolves them, and then finds places where there's more or less story and like re-edits all of it together to be a coherent
tale.
So that you get the most complete picture of these people rather than the snippets that were in three different places.
Interesting. So he kind of is doing some of the stuff that has happened in other worlds where like the main story has kind of already been told and he is now publishing the like, the source books for the like, the outer periphery characters and stuff.
Yeah. Stuff that really doesn't matter, but is like total nerd. Worth owning if you care about this world. So it's really sad, but I had to, of course, get I like ran out and grabbed a first printing of this because he said, "I'm done. This is it. This is the last of the Tolkien universe that will be released." So,
oh, that's good. You know, I think there is something to be said of people sometimes trying to milk that stuff for a little too long. So
I don't know. I feel like if you're 90, I think he's 90, right? And you're just...
Yeah, his son is 90, yeah.
Right,
he died a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. So I was talking about Chris Tolkien. When Chris Tolkien is 90 and still putting these things out, I really don't think it's like milking. I think that if his grandkids just start like writing stuff for like, which they have a right to do, I guess, but like that, you can go into milking in a different way than this. And I feel like the amount of work
being respectful.
Yeah. But the amount of work you're really doing, putting this type of thing together and re-editing it and not just making stuff up to put books out. I feel differently about being this old and still trying to, you know, complete. I think that there's a completion aspect. Like, he's not putting his name on it. He's putting his dad's name on it, and he's trying to complete his world before he's gone.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because, like, a lot of this stuff beyond the Lord of the Rings stuff and, like, the Silmarillion even is, like, is you're getting pretty esoteric in terms of, like, the stuff that you would know about in the world of Middle-earth, right?
Well, yeah, you could say unimportant.
Yeah, you could definitely say unimportant, right? Like, the story of what happens, like, the main story of Middle-earth, right, is told through The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings books, and kind of outside of those four novels, there is a lot of stuff that, you know, the entire history of the world for, you know, thousands and thousands of years has been told, right? And it's not relevant.
Right, sure.
Large swaths of it are completely irrelevant. So, you know, it's stuff that's cool, and if you're really into that world and you want to know that stuff, like, it's awesome that they have that and that he did all that work and created languages for those races and had, you know, like, you know, entire civilizations worth of knowledge and stuff that they had and then passed down and was, you know, run over by a forest since then. You know, it's just really a cool thing that he did developing all these worlds. But, you know, if you just want to read the books, you certainly don't need that context.
Yeah, what I would say, they're still narratives. Like Beren and Lúthien is still a narrative. It's more like listening to like a bard's retelling of something within the world than it is about reading Bilbo's exact journey, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and a lot of his stuff is like, I don't remember what the word is, but like, you know, sort of this is Bilbo's account of what happened during the journey, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all of his books are kind of written from that perspective in a way, right? Like, afterwards, this character sits down and writes down their thoughts. So you're already seeing stuff through sort of a lens in that kind of a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. But I never really got into a lot of the Silmarillion stuff, Andrew. Did you ever read that book?
I did, and I have an earlier edition of it where it was, I think, you know, just sort of a bucket that they put out before it was really edited for good reading. And it's tough. It's tough. I know that there are some people like Steve Colbert out there that live by the extra information there and they can memorize all the details of it, but for the life of me, I don't remember like half to three quarters of the stuff in there. It's cool, but
so my impression of that book was always that it was presented like very dryly.
Yes,
like, almost. That's as what I was like, saying. Like, you're going to read a history, and it's not like intended narratively. It is like in 1401 this happened. And then in 1405,
that was the original presentation of that book. And I think they've revamped it to be more reader friendly. And some of that stuff has been republished too in other volumes that Tolkien Jr. has put out. So,
yeah, maybe I'll have to go check into that and see if it's more worth reading these days.
Yeah.
I am between books at the moment. So,
it's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, ostensibly, this was going to be about The Hobbit, since it's Hobbit Day. You had a favorite version of the book, and I kind of just picked like a part that I wanted to talk about because it was a huge part of the movies and wasn't really part of the book as much,
okay,
I guess. And I wanted to see like what you thought about it. I don't know if you really remember the scenes or the talk between Gollum and Bilbo.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
That's
a very famous scene, I think.
Yeah, it's a super famous scene, and I remember reading it last time and like remembering the riddles and all that sort of stuff. And in the book, you know, he does go through meeting Gollum and the descriptions of where Gollum lived and the riddles and escaping and getting out of the mountain and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
I feel like the context of it originally set up Gollum and then he came back later, but it didn't give weight as much as a reverse view did from the movies. So mm-hmm. like he had these riddles and he had this moment of having a magic ring.
Right.
That allowed him to get out of there. But there was no preview that like the ring was the most important thing in the world. And there was no Gollum. He escaped Gollum and that was it. It was like over.
Right. Well, you know, in terms of the, so I think it's interesting that you bring that up, right? Because obviously The Hobbit was written first.
Right.
And so it's possible at that time when he wrote The Hobbit, he didn't know that he wanted that ring to be the ring.
And I don't know. I don't know if that's true.
And I don't either.
I didn't research it to find out. So if someone knows,
I'm
they
sure
should...
this annotated version of the book will tell us if I hey. Flip to that page. But I don't want to do that while we're podcasting. It's going to take me 20 minutes to find the page.
Somebody should tell us if they know. But it seemed like it didn't have the weight of someone that knew that later on this was going to be something super important. Because I remember reading it and thinking it was super cool. And then you watch the movie and there's this like so much time spent because yeah. you know that Gollum's coming back and... And there's a lot added to the relationship between these two to prove that it's important, right?
Right. And the, you know, and you do then eventually get a version of that story from Bilbo in Lord of the Rings itself as well.
Right. And it's almost more fleshed out.
Yeah. And also the, like, there are like, you know, Bilbo's retelling of the story is like a little different than what happened in The Hobbit, right? And you don't know, is like, is that Bilbo not necessarily telling all of the truth to Frodo, or is it just J.R.R. Tolkien decided he liked this version of events better?
Is it the ring changing Bilbo's story?
Yeah, who can say, right? But, you know, I think that in terms of why it's less weighty in The Hobbit is that, like, a lot of the events in The Hobbits just sort of, like, come and then go, right?
Sure.
They fight the Goblin King under the mountain, right? And then, like, escape down a bunch of chutes.
Oh, God.
And, like, and then they're outside again, and it's fine. Like, you know, stuff like that happens. And, you know, they ride these barrels down a river. It's like, no big deal.
I don't think the barrels scene or the Goblin King scene in the book ever made me cringe. They were always kind of like, oh, okay, cool. They like rolled out in barrels and then snuck down a river.
Right.
Or they fought the Goblin King. I get that. But the movies, not to get too
so
off into
bad.
The movies, because that's like a whole thing. But like, woof, did they really ruin.
The movies, specifically the Hobbit movies, are all so bad. And it's unfortunate. You know, the way that they took a book, which is, like I said, 200 pages or something, like not that long, and turned it into three movies. How do you make three movies out of a 200-page book? All the first book of Lord of the Rings made a 2.5-hour movie, and that book is longer than The Hobbit.
Well, they added weight to a lot of stuff that sometimes didn't need it. Like, yeah, I think that they were right to add weight to Gollum and like.
Sure, right.
Tie it together.
In hindsight, that adding weight there makes perfect sense, right?
Sure, because and trying to make up the eye is actually a person thing.
Yeah, I think that's there is some talk like in the books that you can infer some of that stuff that like maybe that's what that was or whatever.
I actually think that's okay too.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Adding gigantic rabbit chase scenes
and
barrels and
rapids
orcs.
and that
just
a bunch
didn't
of orcs
need to happen.
That weren't in there and the whole thing is just a real problematic.
Yeah.
So you know, the Lord of the Rings movies are good. Go watch those. Don't watch The Hobbit.
Maybe someday I'll have time to edit those three movies down.
The Lord of the Rings movies or the Hobbit movies?
The Hobbit movies.
And, oh, yeah.
And
edit it down
make my
to
my own version to watch.
Edit it down to 1 3-hour movie like it
I
should
think
have
I
been.
I could do it and then just watch that. Like, you know, like, oh, man, this was so good. Remember when they made it all one movie?
Yeah, the Jar Jar-less edit of the Phantom Menace.
There you go. There you go. Right on. So, yeah. Okay, now pick a fictional Hobbit that's your favorite. I'm going to go with Bilbo.
Bilbo is a good choice, obviously. I kind of like Merry, I think. Is it Merry?
One of the Hobbits is named Merry.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember which one is the one that did the thing. Was it...
The woods? Which thing?
So it was Merry, Sam, Frodo, and Pippin.
Pippin, yeah.
And was it Pippin or Merry that ended up with the trees? I know what happened in the movie,
but what
happened
in the
books?
Pretty sure that it was Pippin.
You know, I don't remember which one of the two it was, but the one that like was originally noticed by Treebeard, right? It was the cooler of the two, I think.
I'm almost certain Pippin is the one you're talking about.
Okay, then I think that's my answer.
Okay. Anybody that gets an army of Ents to go destroy orcs is cool in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a cool scene in the movies, too.
Yeah, but you have to watch the extended version, by the way, people.
So then, your favorite Hobbit, you said, was Bilbo.
Sure.
And do you have a favorite non-Hobbit in the story?
From The Hobbit, right?
Yeah, let's pick people that are in The Hobbit, I guess.
Okay.
Okay, here, maybe I'll rephrase that question. Besides Thorin, can you differentiate any of the dwarves enough to have a favorite?
Oh, yeah, man. There's 13 of them.
Yeah, there are, but like, you know.
Okay, let's see. Hold on. Can I do it? Thorin, Feely Keely.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Balin, Dwalin, Oin, Gloin.
Mm-hmm.
There's the bee... Bomber?
That's one of them.
Bofur Bifur.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but those are definitely two of them. That's nine.
Those were all the Durin's cousins, I think. That's nine. So I'm missing... One, two...
And
this is
Thorin.
Probably really boring to listen to. That's probably about as many as I can get right now off the top of my head.
And then Thorin is the 13th one, right?
Oh, okay. Okay. So I can get... I'm missing three.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Honestly, you named more than I expected. I didn't remember some of them until you said them, so...
Oh, okay. Well, somebody send us the other three, because we don't do research on here.
Yeah. But I just more remembering when I was reading it, like, I couldn't remember who anyone was until... I saw their name and I was like, oh, that's a dwarf. Their personalities don't come out that much.
Yeah. No, they don't.
The book.
Do I have a favorite character? Probably the bear guy, Bjorn?
Yeah.
Bjorn?
Yeah, I don't know how to say it.
Yeah. That was cool. They did an okay job of that in the movies, but I think it was cooler. I think they gave it more time in the book, to be honest.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I've read the book. The movie was weird.
Yes, the movie was weird.
But the book was pretty cool.
The book was cool. But probably the bear guy.
Yeah, the shape-shifting bear guy is really cool.
I wish that he had like his own story, right? Because he's supposedly very old and like protects that section of forest and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like a spirit almost in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In how he lives. So, yeah, really cool. I'm a big fan of that guy as well. He's really cool.
Nice.
Awesome.
Well, that's it for Hobbit Day, I think.
Well, if people want to tell us the names of those other dwarves, Andrew, where can they send them to?
podcast@wewergamers.com or tweet them at us. Everything we basically have on social media is We Were Gamers, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. we were smart and grabbed names before we became such internet stars.
Right, yes. So absolutely send us the dwarfs we forgot. I'm sure there's very important dwarves in there that we super couldn't remember, even though all of them are basically faceless changes for each other one, except for the fat one.
Yeah, they're kind of all interchangeable.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this was a nice Hobbit Day special here.
Yeah, and I'll be back from Denver, and we'll do some normal episodes pretty soon.
Sounds good.